Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Car Chat Podcast. I'm Sam Moores, and with us today, on site, we have Adam Hawley. Hello.
Hi Sam.
Hi.
Good to see you again.
Yeah. It's I was looking back, actually before we get into that, can you give the audience a tiny, I don't know, two sentence description of sort of who you are and what you do?
So I'm Adam Hawley, I'm the co-founder of Theon Design. We build cool Porsches.
Yeah. So we first met each other. It was about the time we recorded, maybe a couple of weeks before.
Yeah, about three years ago.
August 2020. So at that point in time, you had started Theon Design. You were doing, you'd done lots of restorations.
Yes.
Before that point. Is that right?
So we'd done a few restorations. To basically show the quality that we could do. And then we, as a big plan to do the recreation cars.
Yeah. And at that point in time, the car that was driving around, that I shot and then drove and we talked about and whatever, was HK001.
Yes.
Which is the first Hong Kong car. That's how you name the cars, right?
Yes, exactly right, yeah.
And which car was that of the Theon Design? Was that number one?
No, that was number two. That was the second car we built. So, and we've just completed the sixth car.
Nice. And so where we were just discussing this as I was setting up in Adam's office here. The last recording, if you go back and look on YouTube, you'll see
this
recording. But we got into your background and why you made the cars and some of the process and the ideas behind it and all of that sort of stuff. So if you're interested in the sort of story of Theon Design going back, I think it was episode, I'm going to say 66, it's somewhere around there, August 2020 on the podcast. But we were in a storeroom above the workshop recording, and it's just
which is where my office
funny,
was.
Which is where your office was. Now you've got like an office.
No, a proper office, yeah. With windows and everything.
And we're in a different building.
We are. We still have the other building, but we have a new, basically we have the other old building, which is now sort of the dirty building, as we call it. And then this is the post-paint customer-facing building. So we have just the nice painted shells and building up for final build.
And in the dirty building as such, I don't know, we could probably give it a slightly better name than that, but that building, because all these cars, as much as you want your process to be like as clean and nice. And actually, if we walk outside this office, there's 4 or 5 cars in build right there. And it's all like super clean. For the first chunk of the process, there's just so much mess.
Yeah, it's just, creates a massive amount of mess. So even stripping a car creates a huge amount of mess. So it's better to keep the two very separate.
Have you found any weird stuff taking a car apart?
Yes. In one of the restoration cars, we found some very interesting letters from a woman to her boyfriend who was in prison. And it was some very detailed descriptions in there.
Nice. And where was that? Was that in
that was in the glove compartment, because it was all locked and we had to get new keys from Porsche. So it hadn't been opened in like 20 years or something.
Oh, wow.
And we got some. Yeah.
And then presumably that was built to do the build, bought to do the build.
So that was a pure restoration car. So that wasn't all the recreation cars, there's not, they're all relatively, they're 964s.
So had someone had, the person that was doing the restoration, had they had the car for a long time?
They hadn't. We actually bought the car to restore it to then sell on.
They wanted like a nice version. So
yeah,
so found one.
Yes,
with some funny documents hidden in it.
Yeah.
So one of the things we talked about in the previous one was like the sort of specs of the cars and stuff like that at that time. Now, has that evolved? Have things evolved a bit?
Yeah, hugely. We've become more and more bespoke and higher and higher quality. We basically just want to build the best possible car we can and as tailored to the owner as humanly possible. So, for instance, the last 3 cars have all been 400 horsepower, but, one was a weekend beast, one was a cross-European tourer, and one was sort of a more refined RS. And so we don't just do a colour and trim exercise, it's completely down to the nuts and bolts of the car, making it, engineering it even to the customer's preference.
So what sort of things have you changed? So if I come to you and say, I want a car, I'm going to be as vague as that. Let's just say it's a Porsche.
Yeah. Well, we only do the 964-based recreation.
Are they getting harder to find now?
No, not particularly. I mean, because most of our cars have actually gone abroad. In fact, our first UK car is about 3 months away from completion, and then we have 5 UK cars in a row, bizarrely.
Oh, nice.
It's not so much of an issue because we're only taking, one or two from each country. It's more difficult to find, but it's not impossible. And we try and take a more tired, run-down 964 and actually give it a new lease of life. I mean, we've had some that have been 250,000 miles, others that you can stand outside the car and put one arm in the engine bay and the other arm inside the car because it's just completely rotten out. So, and that's a good thing to do because, you want to keep these cars on the road. We are completely restoring them and changing them, but we still keep the essence of the original 964.
And you keep quite a lot of the car, like the base of the car. So I've heard with other people, some people are going, actually, if you're going to spend X amount on the whole build, like, just buy a nice car to start with because you're going to end up with less problems. Have you, if someone says, I've got a VIN plate attached to some wheels and they send you, something that's falling apart, do you go, actually, the restoration of this is going to take so much time that it's not worth it?
I mean, there's obviously going to be a limit of where it's, worthwhile doing. But most parts of the car are still available from Porsche, or if not, we can fabricate them.
Yeah.
So you can save most cars, and that's what we'd rather do.
And I guess it's having a new body.
Yeah.
It's having a lot of new stuff.
Yeah.
So the amount of work required on the existing stuff, you're not having to do a whole car.
No, I mean, well, basically, we keep the original safety cell of the car, and then all the carbon panels are bonded or bolted on from there. So it's obviously the wishbones and stuff are kept as well, but it is basically a new car in the sense of all the carbon panels, interior, exterior, the engine is you know, the engine case is kept, but the rest of that is all completely rebuilt. But we don't try and reinvent it. It's not about, you know, they're great cars to begin with, and it's about making them better in every way, but still feel like a 964, because they are great cars to begin with. But, you know, if you can enhance it in every way and make it just feel more connected to the road, and it's amazing, you drive, you know, a tired donor car, and you can feel there's something inside it, but it's just a bit lost and a bit muddied. And then you drive one of our cars, and you can absolutely feel, you know, the essence of the original car, but just brought to life. And just,
it's quite mad, actually, the difference between, I think I drove, when I came to visit you last time, you had one that was about to go into the restoration. So it's like kind of barely running, but running.
Yes.
And I drove that around like for like 2 minutes. And then I went out in your car, and it, like, the difference is between those two is insane.
Yeah.
Like, such a different, obviously it's the same, but it's not at all.
Well, I mean, and now we have the tractive suspension, the semi-active suspension, which makes such a huge difference to the whole drivability of the car. You know, you don't have that kind of, you know, rougher experience of you know, standard coilovers. You have a much more compliant feel to the car.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard when it goes into a corner on the side it needs to be hard and, you know, stiff. And, you know, it's firm when you accelerate, but it's still so much more compliant. You can turn it to be a soft for you know, a cobbled street, but turn it stiff for being, you know, going around a racetrack. And I think that makes such a huge difference to our cars. Makes them so much more usable.
So a lot of people are speccing the tractive system now.
I mean, it's the one thing I say, if somebody's going to use it on any roads, anything like the UK roads, then it's the one thing I say absolutely go for, because it makes such a huge difference.
Yeah, I've driven a 993 resto mod recently that had a tractive setup on it. And it seems like there's one thing, which is putting the suspension on the car. And then there's the next thing, which is how do you then program it, software it, set up? So in your cars, what have you gone for in terms of programming for the suspension in the car? What do you have?
So we have a five-way switchable knob. So we set up the car the way the customer wants. You know, one of the first questions we say is, you know, how are you going to drive this car? Where are you going to drive it? You know, what's the normal, you know, where you're going to drive it? And so we set it up. We have parameters that we have, and we can move it softer or harder or make the bandwidth bigger. And then obviously when the customer drives the car, if they want to adjust it, we can adjust it further. But
yeah, because I found this car, I think it had a similar sort of thing. It was like 1 to 5, or I think it was 1 to 5. And it almost is like, it's like, what's the mood of the week? What's the mood of that day? I was just quite enjoying like the concept of super soft cars. So I had this thing in like 1, and you could feel it like massively move like forward and backwards as you're going into a corner and move around and whatever. And then you crank it all the way up to 5 and you're like, oh no, this is like locked down and stiff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, where do you want in the middle? And that, even actually ignoring the comfort point of view, there's actually some fun to be had. And you wouldn't necessarily want your car like super soft all the time, but you can have quite a playful car if you have it super soft at low speeds.
Yeah, it completely changes the characteristics of the car. You know, you compare it to most modern cars with run flat tires, and it's just so much more compliant. It's so much better.
Yeah, because I keep forgetting how awful the roads are in the UK.
Especially like, in Oxfordshire.
Yeah, like where we are, like where we are here, on the way here, it's just like
pothole central.
Just pothole central. It's an interesting one. Last time I saw you, it was HK Hong Kong 1.
Yeah.
That Hong Kong car went to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. Do you then find after a car's gone somewhere that like bunch of mates of the people that have bought it, or they've taken it to places, and then do you end up getting a bunch of phone calls, people going,
it's, do you know, it's always seems strange that I don't know whether people talk to each other or, but we tend to get a couple from one country, and then, well, as I say, 5 UK cars in a row, and then we've got, I think, 4 US cars. You know, it just seems to be, you know, they do talk to, you know, people talk to each other, and yeah, so it's
funny how that sort of thing happens. I've heard it from some other people where they'll be like a let's just say, exceptionally wealthy friendship group.
Yes.
And some new thing will come out. One of them will go and drive it or come out and be like, oh, yeah, this is great. And they're like, do you think your friends want it? Like, yeah, they're all going to want one. And then you're like, right, there we go. There's six orders or whatever.
Yes.
For whatever the latest, greatest thing is. I had a look back through the Instagram of what we've got. We had a Germany car.
Yeah, so the German car was actually the first car.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So there's the German car, the Hong Kong.
Then another Hong Kong.
Is that Belgium?
So no, there was German car, Hong Kong car, another Hong Kong car. In fact, we've got them here. A Belgium car.
Oh, nice.
And then...
Oh, I like this.
They're the wrong way around, but... so then we had the Belgium car and the Chile car as well, and then the Italian car.
And have they all been... I know you've said some are sort of set up a bit differently and whatever. Do most people go, I think engine choice wise, you had a 3.8 and you had a 4 litre.
We've had 3.8, 4 litres. We've had a supercharged car.
How come you did a supercharged car?
Because that's what the customer wanted. And as I say, it's all about the tailoring of cars to their owner. So he's a big Jaguar fan and he loves supercharged cars. So we did a supercharged for him. But we made sure it was still done in a kind of Porsche way. So it was, we actually positioned it in the same place as the original AC unit and basically integrated it in a way as if Porsche would have done it.
Okay, nice.
So just...
Because that is quite a lot of your thing, isn't it? It's like, how would Porsche do this? You kind of want to do it that way.
Yeah, that's the most important thing for us. Yeah. You know, to keep it, this purity of purpose, make it absolutely... a Porsche thing that, you know, if Porsche weren't building a production car, they would be building a small run of cars. You know, this is what we hope they would have done if they could have done it.
Yeah. All of the specs I'm looking at now are all quite like refined, nice. They're just like quite nice looking things. And outside, it's a similar vibe, like just like nice looking cars. Are we allowed to talk about what we were talking about with the blue one at the end?
We can talk about elements of it. Yes, definitely.
This like the
the carbon tub.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
So talk me through that.
So we're currently in the process of building our first Targa, and we've basically worked with our carbon suppliers to effectively make a carbon tub inside the shell to keep the strength, the rigidity of the Targa, which obviously as soon as you remove the roof, you completely lose. So the whole chassis has been RS welded and then RS seam welded. And then, as I say, we have these two carbon tubs to, you know, absolutely keep the stiff and the stiffness there's, and the rigidity in the chassis.
There's basically these two carbon kind of, tubs is the right word, but I think if someone hears carbon tub, they think of something slightly different. But they're these two tubs are sort of like big inserts that slot exactly into the floor on either side of the transmission tunnel, and they're all bonded in and whatever. And it's going to increase the
torsional stiffness
by significant amounts.
Significant amounts, yes.
Which is quite an interesting solution. Like I've not come across that as a way of was using sort of, what I say advanced, it is advanced materials, but you see a lot more carbon nowadays, but it takes away from building a big bunch of scaffolding around your car and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, because you just, our cars always want to be very, want to be refined. And if you can use a modern solution, engineering solution to improve these cars, you know, that's what you kind of want to do.
Yeah. That way of stiffening stuff. I'm really interested to know how it comes out when it's finished, how it drives and whatnot. Because there's so many older cars that we know are wishy-washy.
Yeah, I mean, the Targa is a great car, but as soon as you remove that roof panel, you definitely feel you've taken it out.
Yeah. So things I remember when on the car I drove, you'd done... And I think you've done this across different builds. You've done little solutions for that driver.
Very much.
And that one, I think, had a reversing camera. Did it have a reversing camera?
That was the one after.
The one after had a reversing
camera. So, it had a flip-down reversing camera because he wanted the reversing camera. but he didn't want it visible at all times. So as soon as you put it into reverse, the camera flipped down so you could see what you're doing, or the screen flipped down so you could see what you're doing. And yeah, we tend to do things like that for pretty much every car.
So the, I think the one
not the reversing screen, but just the solution, things. Very personalised.
So that the one I drove had a phone holder.
That's right. Yeah.
Do you, have you done that across a bunch of them? Or?
So yeah, a lot of our cars have the wireless charger in the dash. And yeah, we're just kind of building on new ideas. And
what are some examples of some other little things that you've done?
there's some very exciting stuff that's in process.
What about in the cars that have come out? Like little details and things.
One little thing we've done on all of the cars actually is the, well, we have the high level brake light as well that's hidden. So it's in the early style cut into the back. And we also have a anti-dazzle rear view mirror. Mm. So obviously because you're very low and as soon as an SUV comes up behind you, you can't see a thing in the back. So we have the auto dimming rear view mirror. That's across all of our cars. And
Something that you pointed out on a table behind the camera, I'm going to need to not move this chair at all.
if you're listening
and you hear this kind of creaky noise, that it's the chairs we're sitting on. But on the table behind the camera are a couple of wing mirrors. And you pointed out something that I've never noticed, but we can talk about it. Your early wing mirror design went through the front window.
Yes, front quarter light, yes. So, and because of that, it had to be a plexiglass, so like an acrylic sheet rather than glass. And we just weren't satisfied with it as a proper solution. And it looked great, but it just, we weren't 100%, you know, we wanted to improve on it. So then we moved to basically fixing it to the door. Because plexiglass, for one, rattles at speed, and especially with a mirror attached to it, and also for a safety aspect, you know, it's a glass window is a lot harder to break through than a plexiglass one.
Yeah.
So it's fine for a race car, but for a road car, you want, you know, the refinement of glass.
Yeah, and that thing of, I don't know, I've definitely driven a car that's had a vibrating side mirror or whatever, and you're driving along and you're like, literally, what's the point? Like, you might as well not be there, because above, at any speed that 40 miles an hour or whatever, it's just rattling away. And and then also, I remember seeing, we talked about this in the previous one, but your the design for the wing mirror.
Yes, so we also resolved that as well, to make it more dynamic visually, and obviously it will flow better through the air as well.
And I think, but I remember you talking about you spent ages designing this wing mirror because it looks cool, but then having the is it electric?
Yes, so it's still electric.
It's all electric, adjustable, and
so yeah,
whatever.
We refined all the engineering components of it because it was a very difficult thing to put together. It took just as long to bloom and put the wing mirror together as the whole door, basically. But it's now much, much easier, and we've refined all that. So that's part of the R&D of a business like ours. Yeah, we try and resolve things as well as we possibly can and improve them.
Yeah, absolutely. Turbocharged? Have you done any turbocharged cars?
We haven't done a turbocharged car yet. We've done, as I said earlier, we've done a supercharged car, we did in a kind of as close to being a Porsche way as possible with regards to as close to being a turbocharger the way it works and the install. But the customer ordered a supercharger, so that's what we did.
So if I came to you and said I want a 964 turbo?
Yep, we'd more than happily do that.
Okay, so you're open to literally...
Yeah, I mean, the whole point is it's a completely tailored product, and that's the point. Yeah, that's our USP, I guess.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting coming back and seeing, like, last time there was the car that was done, and then there was a sort of few stages of vehicles before that, and then the workshop where, you know, restoration, whatever was going on. But coming in now, I wish I could, I technically could, but I'm not going to move the camera for those watching. Walk in next door. And yeah, there's like five cars all looking pretty great, ready to go or being put together. What stage are the ones here at?
So the ones out there, there's one completed car, there's Italy out there, and there's a couple of cars that are just pre-trim, so they're in the pre-trim build, and we also have a restoration project out there as well. So,
and so for at this point, they get taken apart initially,
yep.
Then like chassis and whatever gets done.
All the chassis, all the coach works get done.
Then they get put back together. They get built.
So what we do is then we all the carbon is bonded onto the chassis, and then everything is, all the lights and everything are dry fitted to the car, and then it can be painted, and then it comes back for pre-trim build, and then obviously trim, and then final build.
Yeah. Yeah, they're looking, I kind of want to go and have a look, poke around some more cars. I normally ask five questions. I think this is a good way to get back
not
in.
Not your questions.
Do you remember? Well, I do. Haven't changed.
That's haunted me.
If you could only drive one car for the rest of your life.
Do you know what? I would actually use one of ours as a daily driver. I'd be happy.
And how would you spec it now?
Do you know what, my spec choice has completely changed, and yeah, I would, still not sure about colour, because every time we build a car, I just love all the colours that all of our customers have built. But yeah, I'd certainly go 4-litre, 6-speed, and
That's, the colours thing is so tricky, isn't it? Because I kind of in my head have like a, this is my spec, like on any car kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, but then you see some specs that people do that someone else might be like, this is my thing. And you go, oh yeah, but that's pretty good. I quite like that.
Yeah. It's interesting actually, some of the specs that customers that we've discussed, for their project. And I've kind of thought, well, I'm not sure if that's going to work. And obviously I've spoken to them and suggested, well, I don't know if we should go a slightly different route. And then, no, that's the route I'm going to go. Okay, it's your car. And it comes to the end of it. And every time I have to say, hats off, you were right. It looks phenomenal. Yeah. So, you never know until you actually physically see it.
And I think that must be one of the things as well. If you're doing the spec, if you're deciding, you're like, but I don't know.
Yeah, like, no, it's really hard. It's really hard.
And I think the ones that really like nail it are on the edge. They're like,
yeah.
They're just like, they're not the absolutely obvious whatever, like, I don't know, green tan or whatever. Yeah. But whether it's the details or the different bits or the inserts or something, it's like, there's an element of like on the edge. Yes. And then you look at the final car and go, Exactly.
It's taking the risk and, something cool will come out of it.
Because you do like 3D renders of all the interiors and stuff.
Yeah,
and
so I work with the customer and, send them half a dozen options for example for the interior, and so they can pick and choose elements and we work together to make the perfect interior for them.
I remember actually that was one of the things when we'd shot some photos, and then you were like, oh, someone wants a different interior whatever in the car, and it was not very long, I think it was like 5 minutes. You were like, yeah, so here's like an iteration. I was like, I just took that photo and gave you that photo and you've changed the interior of the car to something different. And I was like, okay, I need to go back to Photoshop and practice my skills.
Well, that's the great thing about Photoshop though, isn't it? It's just, it's an awesome, such a powerful tool.
Yeah, it is. Do you see a lot of these renders and stuff that people do generally they appear on Instagram of like, it might be, the Kaiser is one that pops into my mind, sort of first did a lot of, it might be a 911, and then, but he's made it like a end of the world off-road spec.
Okay, I have seen them, yeah.
But loads of like crazy stuff. One recently that I thought is not crazy in the slightest, but it's really interesting what some people do on the internet. And you kind of almost look at some manufacturers and go, I think you should just let the people on the internet do it for you.
There's a lot of talent out there, some really good people.
Yeah. And like the front end of your car is horrific.
You said that, not me.
What do you think is the most undervalued car at the moment?
Yeah, no idea. Basically, we've just literally got back from Salon Privé, and I'm kind of, and Vista Heritage, we did the Sunday Scramble over there, and yeah, my mind is completely scrambled at the moment.
What were those two events like for you? What was Salon like?
Salon was absolutely phenomenal. It was brilliant, just chatting to lots of, you know, potential customers and just people interested in the cars. Yeah, it was phenomenal.
Did you have a mooch around the other stuff?
Yeah, only very briefly, because we didn't really get the chance to go around.
Yeah, true. You kind of need to be there next to your car. What was the most interesting thing you saw there?
So it was quite interesting to see the Delage, the tandem
two-seater
Formula One car for the road.
I think, yeah.
There was some very interesting design aspects to that. So, obviously complete opposite end of the scale to us. There was some interesting stuff there.
It's interesting. I saw the I don't know how you pronounce it, Weissman.
I
think it's called the Thunderbolt. I find it interesting seeing some of these brands that have not, they kind of disappeared for a while, come back, but with an EV.
Yeah.
I'm really intrigued as to how this is going to go ultimately in whatever. 20 years time, I'm sure, I think everyone will be driving EVs, so it won't seem so odd. But to launch a new sports EV at the moment, I think is a really interesting move. Because I just don't know. I'd really like to know from these people, like, how the order books are doing and stuff.
Well, it was so strange because we did the supercar parade and, you know, there was, you know, a hybrid in front of us and like three electric cars behind us. And our car is the only car making any noise.
Yeah.
And part of you kind of feels like, well, we shouldn't be making quite as much noise. But part of you thinks, well, actually, this is what a car is about. This is the heart and soul of a car.
Especially a sports car.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's an interesting space moving forward. But yeah, I thought it was, went along for a bit. Thought it was a good event. I was just discussing with Adam about how I meant to record a podcast. So apologies to the listeners. I knew I was coming here, so I knew I was going to get you.
Yeah.
And then I didn't. I just spent too much time chatting to a mate about whatever.
Cars,
exactly. And having a drink and stuff. Most interesting car to you at the moment?
Each one of our cars, because they're all so bespoke. I'm just amazed by whatever all the customers want to do with regards to different aspects, and the fact that all of our cars drive so differently. It's so amazing what you can do with a single chassis and make such a completely just range of different cars out of it.
That is, I think that must be, I think some people must look at it and go, okay, but you've got like a 964, 911, like how wide an experience you go?
It's phenomenal. I mean, the last three cars we built a weekend beast that was absolutely phenomenal to drive and just, you know, revs up so quickly and it was, you know, quite firm, but it was still very drivable and, you know, it was an awesome car to drive. We built a cross European tourer, which the gentleman picked up in January when it was minus 10 and drove to Belgium for the weekend, you know, and then, you know, the Italian car is kind of a more refined RS. And they are such completely different personalities of cars. It's amazing how we can get such a variation.
And with those, do you do different levels of like sound deadening and window types and stuff?
We can do, yes. It's all down to customer preference. So, whatever the customer wants, really. So, you know, you can do, for instance, RS glass, which is obviously lighter and therefore, you know, save you weight, but obviously you will get a little bit less sound deadening from it. And the same with throughout the car.
Yeah. 5-car garage. Unlimited value.
I should have done some prep work, really, shouldn't I?
I mean, I have asked you that one before. That is a tricky one. I've just told you that I had five cars and I've gone, I don't want five cars. I've now got two.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I probably want five different Porsches of five different generations just because they are such great
cars. Go on then, five. Give me five.
Probably a 2.7 RS. Okay. Just because why wouldn't you? Actually, a 911 ST, so same generation really, but there we go. Obviously, one of our cars, so that's three. Probably a 991 Targa.
Yeah.
And probably a 992, GT2 RS or something.
Yeah, something monster.
Yeah.
If you'd asked me, I don't know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, if I'd looked at someone's collection and it was like every iteration of Porsche RS car or something, and then literally every major Ferrari or whatever, I'd go, oh, that sounds a bit boring. But now I'm so nerdy on Porsches and stuff, I'm like, yeah, I'd have a 996 and a 997 and a 991 RS, and then I'd have a GTS.
But they're all so great, but so different again.
I think they're not that different, but if you start getting into the differences and the, maybe the times and when they came out and what they were like and whatever, it's very easy to start, slicing it thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner. But yeah, it's an interesting way of looking at it. I think we should go and have a look around some of these cars.
Let's do it.
So thanks very much for a little bit of an update.
No. And, good to see you again. Good to have you back again.
Yeah. Cheers.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.